Hello, welcome to the Mac Show. Yes, we're here to discuss all the big stuff that's gone in Mac this week. There is a little bit of news, which isn't too bad. Joining me, awesome panel. We're on Hangouts, by the way, because my office is frigging warm. And I've got an air conditioner here. So you can work it out for yourself. Why would I go down the office and sweat when I'm a fat bloke, when I can sit in an air-conditioned office? And there's cold Guinness in the fridge just behind me.
Awesome.
And as in the next room, I've got to leave and leave you lot talking to go and get it. So if I vacate my chair, that's where I've gone. Chuck Latornis is here.
I am.
How you doing, pal?
Thanks for having me back.
I love the new look in the office, mate.
Well, thank you. It's amazing what a little cleaning can do. You'd be amazed at some of the things I found back here.
Well, yeah, you found a VCR.
I did. I found a VCR that still works. I found an old tape deck that didn't, so of course I had to replace it, even though I'll probably never use it again. But it didn't work, so that bothered me. What else we got? I have, that's my old bass amplifier. So if anybody's looking at a bass player, I'm ready to go again.
Brilliant. Why did you stop? You didn't stop bass playing, did you?
No, I still play. I'm not in a steady band anymore, but I would like to sit in every once in a while, and I pick it up a couple of nights a week and play. I found a new website that I like a lot called Ko-Fi.
You should
basically type. Good.
Do you talk to Sam Biasman?
I do. Yeah, I'm friends with Sam.
Yeah. He gave me a lesson because I got myself a 6-string fretless bass, which is kind of like a bit in at the deep end, I fully admit. But he gave me a lesson at 7 a.m. in the morning in my office. It was
Sam
brilliant.
Was great. Yeah. He's got an electric upright bass that I just pulled.
He's proper talented as well. You're no mean bass player yourself, though. I've heard you at Macworld. So.
Thank you very much.
Next to him, Jamie Ricards in south of France, sweating his cubs off in the ceiling.
Yes, bonjour. Powered by English Vimto, sugar-free, of course.
How much did you take back, man? You've been home for 3 weeks.
I told you. That's, if anybody knows the BN, is it BNB stores in England? Yeah, well, I'll pretty much wipe their stock out. I told you, everybody, every house I go to, I take 3 litres to their house and say, just if I come round, just top me up on that. Yes, it's...
The car
it's
was stuck. Sloshing around on the motorway on the way out.
It really was. some people smuggle, beer back into France. I smuggle Vimto. There you go. I sound all eccentric, don't I, all of a sudden? But yes, just like in the UK, we are proper chuffing hot, so I can't even boast about being the south of France. It's really hot. It really is. So the air conditioner's on. So sorry if you can hear it in the background, but everything's good. Thank you for asking. It's good to be here, as always.
Adam's having trouble rebooting his computer.
Adam, he should know what he's doing.
He should know how to reboot a computer. Well, you'd have thought so, right?
I'll be asking for any advice anyway.
Next to him, a bloke with an echoey room.
Yep.
In Germany, Patrice, and sod all to your name. Sitting on a packing case.
Yep. Yeah, basically. I mean... There's this entire apartment is empty other than the kitchen counter and some boxes. That's it. All cleaned out. Not even a bed or anything.
It's too late. So where are you sleeping tonight then?
On the floor.
So it's too late to change your mind?
Yeah, definitely too late for that. Way too late.
But it's too hot in there. You're longing to get back to Phoenix for cooler weather.
Yeah, I mean, temperature-wise, Phoenix is right now a little bit higher, but not that much. But, I mean, it's just, I mean, you're sweating here constantly. It's like, yeah. It's just too humid. It's Germany, exactly.
We're humid. Inland's never good. Yeah. When do you get back out?
Monday. Going with Frankfurt Sunday and then flying out Monday.
All right. And then that's it? No more trips home?
And that's... every now and then, but no. Next Hotel. One is to Italy. Yep.
Nice. And next to him, out of witness protection in the garden, Tom Biefer said he looks like he's in witness protection at an undisclosed hotel. Will Green.
Yes, I am. I'm on the run.
You're hello. Running away.
Hello, chaps. How are you all?
Well, good, mate. How are you?
I'm very well. I've made location to, because if I've got the sun behind me, you just look like a big piece of black, don't you?
Witness protection.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, no, I'm all good. I'm excited about talking about Mac today because we've had quite a bit of news, haven't we?
Oh, amazing amount of news. Amazing amount.
Steady on. A little bit. The week in Apple. All the shiz that's gone on then. The greatest story of the week. Gary Vaynerchuk says that Planet of the Apps failed because of Apple's poor marketing.
Yeah, basically, we know what he's like. He's saying, oh, I'm here, by the way. I can help.
No, it's because it was shit.
Yes.
Hands up, right. A quick run down the line. Who thinks Planet of the Apps was an under-par program?
I never even give it any eyes.
See, that's Chuck. That's he doesn't use profanity. He just says, oh, my goodness, and you know exactly how he feels.
You got to get in kudos for the name. I mean, Planet of the Apps, that's a great name, isn't it?
Shame what they did with it, though.
Was that the only good bit of it, though?
That was the highlight.
You get the feeling they just did that. They wanted to see if the cameras worked and needed something to show. You know, I don't think there's a whole lot of thought behind it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, no. Not good.
No, no amount of marketing could have saved that show.
No. Not even Gwyneth. No. Right, so on to the real news. I really like this. Apple shows off photos of the new Piazza Liberty store in Milan. And I've got to say, there's a bit of me kind of cringes at the fact that Apple just seems to be going around doing architectural wonderness across the planet with its stores rather than just realizing you only sell computers, chaps. But the Milan store is a thing of beauty. Have you looked at it?
Yeah, my friend's actually setting it all up. So I saw some photographs, and it is stunning. I could hardly believe what I was seeing. His Instagram feed is amazing. But yeah, it's a beautiful building. They're using water, I think, for probably the first time in an Apple Store design shop, which I think is amazing. Amazing.
Well, I think it's quite interesting because they are using water. You're dead right. But they're not letting it run down the glass. It's clearing the glass and dropping down off the roof.
Because we all know what happens when water meets glass.
Well, I just thought that was quite telling of the fact that they haven't made like an infinity pool with the glass trickling down the side, the water trickling down the side of the glass and that kind of stuff.
It's a bit corporate, that. It's too corporate.
Yeah.
It's because Apple doesn't know how to make waterproof glass enclosed things yet.
Yeah. You'd have thought, actually. Yeah, the store's IPX67. Last night we had Chris Ashley on the big show, and he showed off a speaker and he said it's IPX4, and it was for like the trailer thing in the football stadium when he's doing the tailgating. And he said, it's a great thing. It's rechargeable. It plays and it's IPX4. I said, is that beer proof? IPX4 is now beer proof. Adam's joined us.
Hey.
Mate, worked out how to restart your computer.
Hmm?
Worked out how to restart your computer.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I come in the morning and it's turned itself off and I don't know what that's all about, but. And then it wasn't booting. I have to zap the pram and then it boots fine, but something weird is going on.
Mm-hmm. Especially if PRAM fixes it, because it fixes sod all else.
So.
We were just saying about the Milan store. Have you seen it?
I haven't been to Milan recently, no.
No. As in, I haven't either. I've never been to Milan. I just saw the pictures.
Just got back.
I saw the pictures and I'm spitballing, so shoot me.
No, I haven't. I know about it and I knew it was opening. I have not seen the current pictures, but it sounds beautiful.
The technology that Apple has got to release, forget about the bloody phones and all that kind of crap. They've got to release how they get a glass cube in sunlight for most of the day to keep the store cool underneath. Because you'd have thought, you know, Fifth Avenue, the big glass cube there, And this one's got the big glass vestibule on top. You'd have thought that that place would be absolutely baking with that at the top of it, but no.
Well, you know the story that they actually do build these stores in a warehouse prior to actually being built in situ. So all this stuff, that's actually, that's what I was told when I was in Cupertino. A true story that there's a warehouse and they actually build all these buildings inside a closed warehouse, especially retail stores, because they only get one go at these stores, remember?
The inside, not the outside, surely.
Well, no, the complete store is built. So Angela and at the time Steve Jobs and Tim would be able to walk around and feel what it's like in those stores. You know, you get something like that, you can't just turn up to Milan and build that glass block and expect it to work on site first time, first go. So that would have been built somewhere in a very dark warehouse at undisclosed location in California. It would have been taken apart and then built again inside. So there you go.
Well, I heard a different story. I mean, they don't build the entire thing, but they sometimes build key aspects. So I mean, I remember the spaceship, the campus. They built sections out of that in a warehouse to see how it would go, to make sure the technology works and so on, before they committed to building it a certain way and really manufacturing everything.
And Jim, I'm sure you might agree with me, Will, on this one, but on the Genius Bar and on the Creative Bar, to answer Ewan's question, the air conditioning was absolutely extreme. So in the middle of summer, I would be frozen. When you're sitting underneath the air conditioning unit, it's blasting down. Even the customers were complaining about it.
Mm. Yeah, the trouble with stores that are built inside malls or shopping centres, as we call them, that obviously we were relying on them to help us with the air conditioning, and it always failed because the Apple stores, the only place that had a maximum amount of people in the door. Now, most shops like Debenhams and H&M could sort of manage and regulate their airflow a lot easier. But when you had an Apple store inside a mall or shopping center, because there's that many people in there, the architect just didn't know what to do. There's that much carbon monoxide in the air, in the air that the...
You've got bigger problems if it's carbon monoxide, mate. Smells are going to take a right dip.
I think it's too much stuff in my bingo. I've got something in my bingo. So that's what would happen is it just couldn't regulate itself. And the guys who used to outsource the air conditioning would say that they would have to change a filter in an Apple store once a week, where normally in a normal store it would be once a month. So there you go. There'd be that much shit, dust and hair and rubbish in an air conditioning filter in that store that they had to once a week. There you go. True story. True story.
Fantastic true story. The story of hair and filth in Apple's...
mate, it was grim. Let's face it. It was grim.
Well,
that much traffic.
That many nerds coming in, yes.
Yeah.
Who haven't washed for months.
Yeah.
We were always ill.
The filters were clogged with Cheeto dust.
Orange. Just shaking outside.
Oof. You've been tangled.
I think one favorite things about the Apple stores, the newer ones, especially is the just utmost respect they show to the environment and to the places that they're putting the stores in. And, you know, I think it started with the Fifth Avenue store in the Cube that Ewan talked about, but it really, to me, the biggest first example of that was when they opened that store in Grand Central Station in New York. It wasn't a separate enclosed store. It was kind of organically built into the existing market. It didn't really change the aesthetic. It didn't ruin the line look or the character of Grand Central Station. It kind of, you know, the store morphed itself to fit the environment. And I think that they've carried that concept through to a lot of the stores they've built. And I think it's just a beautiful result every time that I've seen it.
I did get to go to the Michigan Avenue store this week.
Sweet picture.
And see that. Well, and so speaking to what Chuck's talking about, it was hard to get a dang picture of that thing because you can't I mean, you see right through it. So when you take a picture of it, you can't really even tell what you're looking at, especially from a distance, because it's just the roof, you know, it's just this flat floating, you know, stainless steel roof. And then when you're standing next to it, you're seeing all the way through the entire store to the river. The other thing about it is that 2/3 of that store are not store. It's just space. The upper two floors are just places for people to sit and plug in, and they've got USB ports, and they've got, you know, so like most of that store, and then half the bottom floor is not the retail space. It's the giant screen for doing all of the events and stuff like that. So it's just seating and events and trees. And, you know, so like, it's amazing to think when you're building a retail space like that, you know, Apple's new philosophy of it being a place for people to just come hang out, that is working at least in those stores. Huh?
I just meant to say, actually, is that the town hall policy?
Yeah, that's the town hall policy. And it was definitely working. I mean, there are a lot of people just hanging out in there because it is so beautiful. And you're overlooking the river, and they've got, you know, charging ports for people to plug in. And granted, you know, it's in a high traffic touristy kind of town. So I think there's a lot of people coming in there to use the Wi-Fi and stuff like that. But I mean, when we were in there, there were a lot of people just hanging out, not even, you know, doing anything other than that. And the retail space is definitely built for that. I mean, like I said, 2/3 of that store is not about selling stuff. Mm. 2/3 of that store is dedicated. And what other retail stores do you know that are like that? I mean, that's really weird.
And you guys probably remembered this, but when the Apple stores first opened, they all had these theaters. I think that's right. What they're called, theaters, in addition to the GRs. And it was very much still that aspect of, we're not here just to you know, walk up to a shelf and buy merchandise. This is the experience. And then for a while, they started shifting away from that. They even took the theaters out of a lot of stores, and they opened smaller stores and malls. And I think that might have been under Ron Johnson, but I can't remember for sure.
Right.
But I'm so glad to see this shift back to that kind of experiential mode and philosophy. Yep. I think it's true.
I think it depended on the space that they could buy, though. Because if you look at the shop that James was in charge of at Touchwood, there's no units there you could do anything with other than sell computers out of it. I'm right, Rich, James? Whereas if you look at the places that they've bought since, like the movement to the old Midland Hotel site in Birmingham, and that's very much more about the experience. They got into a habit of buying, or they wanted presence rather than they wanted to have experience at Solihull.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean, the first store to go into the UK was a Regent Street store. Now, when that store went in, that was obviously known as a flagship store, a flagship status, which basically meant that it had a theatre area. And like you said, it was just like going to cinema, really, at the top end of the store, glass stairs, going to cinema type floor. And of course, when it got rehashed about a year ago, they replaced all that massive screen and those free-form square chairs, which are just brilliant, absolutely brilliant, which means you can move those chairs around. And in fact, in the UK, the new Birmingham store that you was referring to now, they've just obviously put those square chairs in now upstairs, and it's made the whole thing so much more friendly to everybody. It also means that people working there, doing those workshops, are in a much lighter, brighter environment. But I think you're right, in the early days, Ewan, we were just something in a mall, and I think Apple are really trying to get out of the mall if they can, and you know, and buy those unique spaces that they're renowned for. Like the ones in France are just brilliant. France doesn't have many malls in the way it has lots of beautiful buildings, and Apple just do a great job at finding these old buildings and just throw money at them like, you know, it's not a problem.
Right. The one thing I commented on to somebody after going to that store in Chicago was, you remember a while back, especially financial magazines and stuff like that used to make a big deal about the dollars per square foot that Apple was generating out of their retail stores. And that stat's now blown out the window because they've got these huge spaces and very little of it is retail.
There's a great point that Chuck's just reinforced in the chat room. Magic Man's in there. His firm do retail space refurbishment. And he said it's not uncommon to have a procedure where you run a demo to iron out problems before you close the retail store because you want to reduce the amount of closure time that you can probably have. And that's a really good point. It's not you know, as affluent as I was at first thinking there. And I've got to say, Martin was up for the bash, and he was telling me they did a store, I won't say which one it is, but they had the guy come round who does the vetting of it before it's handed back and stuff. And he said, well, we're not having it back because the crosshead screws in the hinges aren't vertical and horizontal.
Oh.
They had to go round and hand tighten everything so that they were all aligned perfectly horizontally.
I think that's a fair point, and I love him for saying that because it really annoys me. When if you get imagine you're putting a sign up and you've got one screw that is slightly to the right and one screw that's sort of horizontal and vertical. And
in an internal closing hinge, that's getting a bit picky though, isn't it?
Maybe I'm slightly. I don't know.
No, your standards are at the same level as the large retail chain that Martin was working for. So
okay.
He would call you a bastard. No, I'm only kidding. You didn't say that. I made that up. Apple sells 3.5 million watches in Q2. I think that's quite telling because you would have expected that Q3 is going to be an upgrade quarter for Apple Watch, no?
I think we know the watches are going to be updated, well, possibly this year. But I think they're such a great bargain. They're such a great gadget. That I think people don't really care about it being upgraded because you look at the watch and thinking, well, how much can that watch change? I mean, I bought a version 3 about a month, probably 2 months ago, knowing very well that it could change this year, but I'm really happy with what it does, as in the GPS now, water resistance. It's got the, where it knows, what's it called, the barometer built in now as well. So that watch is doing everything that I want it to do. So I think people are quite happy to buy a watch that delivers all those features right now. And if anything's going to change, probably it might be the shape, it might be rounded, etc. It might be slightly thinner. But if somebody wants to buy an Apple Watch, I think it's a good time to buy. You're getting a lot for your money now.
Yeah. I've noticed that walking around, if I notice people having watches, and you know, this could be a little of the information bias because I own an Apple Watch and obviously I'm an Apple fan, but it feels like to me every time I look at someone's wrist, if they have a watch, probably about half the time it's an Apple Watch of some variant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm curious, Adam, what percentage do you think have the little red dot that indicate the
silver? Far fewer. Again, I think what James is talking about is I think a lot of people are picking up the Series 1 or the Series 2 on a really good deal, you know, at Target or something like that. So the Series 3, maybe 10%, maybe 15%, if I'm being really generous.
Yeah, that's what I would guess, 10, 15.
Yeah, and I agree. The bargains you can get on the older series, if you don't want cellular, you don't need it, then I not only don't need it, I wouldn't want cellular on my watch right now. You can get amazing bargains on those older ones, and the performance is really just about on par with the latest.
But they're sorry.
Go ahead, Will.
I was going to say, but they're so ugly. I think it's possible watch I have ever seen.
Well, you've been saying that now for 3 years, so I think we can move on.
You know where
I don't disagree with you, but I think it's time to move on, Will. It's not going to change. So.
You know where people deal with that, though? And this is another area that I'd love to see numbers on, and I don't see people reporting on, is the bands. A lot of people that I know that have Apple Watches are swapping out bands like crazy. I mean, they'll do them in seasons. They'll do them to match outfits. They'll do them to, you know, and it may or may not be Apple's bands. I see a lot of Apple's bands, but a lot of it's probably just third-party bands. But, you know, that's sort of how they deal, I think, with the quote-unquote, it's ugly. I happen to like the design, but I know where you're coming from, Will, but I think that's how people are handling it, is they're finding different styles of bands and customizing and personalizing the watch that way and sort of making it their own. The only other comment I was going to say is with buying the older watches, a lot of the people that I talk to when I ask them, you know, why did you get Apple Watch? Almost always it's the fitness side of things. It's like, I want to get healthier. I like the stand reminders. I like the challenge of the rings and stuff like that. So that part of it, I think Apple focusing on that is really helping also sell watches.
Chris actually was on last night. I mean, he's another person who's lost an absolute shed ton of weight. And he said that, and he's a Microsoft man through and through, and he really loved the band as I did, the Microsoft band, but they've decided to discontinue that. And he said, you know, as much as he hates having to say it, the Apple Watch is really good. Those rings are really nagging at him. He sits there and he looks at his watch and it's like 10:45. yeah, I can do those extra few calories. So he goes for a walk and stuff like that. So it's it is good. It does work, definitely. The thing that's quite interesting as well within this is that although their sales are up, their market share has gone down. So Garmin and the Fitbit have really bitten into that quite heavily. And I know Chris Campion's got the new Garmin watch, and a lot of people are raving about that.
I think, I mean,
I like the Garmin a lot. I think they do a really good job. I think they're smart about it. I think I wrote about it when the Garmin Vivo Fit first came out, and I like the approach they took. But when Apple at the time was still trying to figure out what they wanted the watch to be, and I think they were looking at as more of a fashion accessory back then, Garmin went right in, way in on the fitness aspect of it, and it was a really good fitness tracker that had some nice notification capabilities. So I think it was a kind of end run around what Apple was doing.
How is their integration with HealthKit? Because that's the one thing that I'm finding too. Like, my wife has had a Garmin and liked it, but she most recently said to me, yeah, I think I want an Apple Watch now. And I think part of it is the integration with the health stats and other apps and stuff like that. And I know early on Garmin was supporting it pretty well, but a lot of companies I've noticed have sort of tried to push away from it as they see sort of Apple grabbing that. And I don't know if it's a privacy thing. I don't know if it's, you know, why they're shying away, but I think that's a problem too for third parties, because again, people who are in the ecosystem, they want all their apps to have that data and work together, you know, whether you're using Strava for cycling or some of the other running apps and things like that. I think with third-party trackers, they need to be into the HealthKit ecosystem, especially if you're targeting people with iPhones and stuff like that. And it seemed like some companies started to shy away from that.
I haven't looked at Garmin's hardware in a little while, but I know that they have an app, the Garmin Connect, and I believe that the Garmin Connect can access all the same HealthKit information as any other app. As far as I know, Apple doesn't have any limitation in that option.
Right.
There's a few of the big watchmakers has also got their own versions of like the Garmin thing, where they've got circular LED screens in it and stuff like that. I know I saw a pal of mine who's got a Tag, and he paid a goodly price for it, as you know you would for a Tag, but that's focused on the health element, and it does all the stuff that, or a lot of the stuff that the Apple Watch will do in terms of working with HealthKit and that type of thing. So
yeah, the HealthKit stuff is the key for me, because I can have an app like, you know, Carrot for my weight tracking. I also use the Carrot calorie tracker and stuff like that. And it's really cool when all of that stuff aggregates together, because it's funny, because you'll go into the activity or into the health app, and you know, suddenly if you're logging all your food and stuff like that, you have all of that nutrition information. So, you know, not, you know, how much protein have I been eating? How many carbs, you know, how much vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin D am I getting? You're like, how does it have all this data? And then you realize, oh, well, I logged the food, so it knows. And it's the aggregate of all that stuff that I think really is kind of amazing. And sometimes people don't think about, you know, especially all these apps that tie into it and building up that data profile. It's fun to look at. And I don't look at it all that often, but every time I go into that app, I'm like, whoa, this is kind of really cool. And then again, and then it encourages me to want to log my stuff more and sort of track that stuff and be more aware of my overall health, not just, you know, not just my weight.
As much as I hate the term gamification, there's got to be a better one for it. I think that concept is really important in all this, because as you're saying, Adam, it's the thing that makes you want to keep doing things, and these things only work when they're fed with that data. And if you can make it fun to enter, or make the reward for entering it sufficient enough that you want to keep going, then that builds up momentum. And that's one of the things that really helped me when I was on my own weight loss journey. Is that new age enough? Is being able to look at all these things, all the trending things, and how they integrated together, and how they showed me not just data but information, and really put a picture together for me. And the level up, the sharing if you're into that, and even the very specific reminders about if you take one 15-minute walk, another 15-minute walk today, you can close that ring, and that's pretty motivating.
And I mean, for me, I mean, I work in the medical industry, medical software industry, and I mean, all those tracking capabilities, especially for people with any kind of chronic illnesses, is almost a game changer. I mean, it allows doctors to actually see whether the things that that the patient agreed to, whether they're actually doing it. I mean, if you say, yeah, I'm going to exercise 3 times a week, and you share your health data, and then the doctor looks at that data and sees, oh, you really didn't do it, then, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are big research projects in a couple of countries, for example, in France, going in this direction right now. How can
and
we
And psychologically, Patrice, that I think that's an impact too, right? Because if you know that your doctor is going to know if you eat, you're less likely to cheat.
Yes.
You know you're going to get caught. So you can't say, oh, I'll just tell the doctor to exercise. No, he's going to see that you didn't. You know, the gig is up, so I might as well just do it.
I think this this is an area too, unlike where, security and privacy on something like Siri is sort of presenting a challenge for Apple. I think in, again, selling more Apple Watches and getting people into the health ecosystem, I think Apple's focus on security and privacy on this side of the equation is another thing that is likely driving Apple Watch sales. Because I think, you know, people with their health data, they get really leery, you know, about, oh, if I'm sharing that with my doctor, you know, is my insurance company going to get a hold of that? And are they going to sell that data, you know, outside of this private system? And that's a big concern. And Apple is the only company that has an end-to-end solution where that's a priority. As far as I know, I don't think Samsung and some of the other companies are really focusing on that. You know, outside of the sort of requirements of HIPAA and other things that they have to comply with. I mean, that you can't get away from. But, you know, Apple's taken it even further and built these, at the developer level, APIs and things that make this happen. They've partnered with major medical institutions all over the world and, you know, really they focus on that.
They haven't factored death into it, though, have they?
They haven't factored death into it. Go on.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, go on. Tell us more.
Studies find that most people stop using their phone when they die.
But that is you could so there's an IT crowd and websites where you can put on, you know, how much you drink, how much you eat, how much exercise you do, etc. And it's going to tell you when you die. And I think that'd be really fun if it's in the watch thing. Listen, Greeny, you're going to die in 3 years if you don't change your habits. You know, you're eating too much pizza, you're eating too much curry. You know, in America, and I might have mentioned this before, but it always makes me laugh.
This better be true before you start slanging everyone.
No, this is absolutely true. In America, there was this old folks' home, and I think he was one of the care workers. he dressed as the Grim Reaper with a scythe and everything and went round to the window and started knocking at it. The window is the Grim Reaper, and 3 people died because of it. Isn't that awful? I think a lot of these things...
I think you would find that in a court of law, they might suggest that was an obvious line to draw.
But I do think they should put a death thing into the Apple Health Watch.
I went to a fancy dress party at an old people's home dressed as a Grim Reaper. How was I supposed to know? It's not a defense.
No, but the
I'd be curious.
Look it up on the internet and... he was banging on the window. That's the part that really makes you laugh.
Curious to know how many people, when they have 3 years to live, are going to change their ways, or they're just going to go on a 3-year bender.
That's a good point. That's a bender.
Bender.
Yeah. I do. I really think they should put a death warning in there. So you type it on your details, you know, how much you drink, how much you smoke, how much you eat, and your watch says. It'd be quite nice if it had a countdown, wouldn't it?
But there's a bit of me now, Grinny. Right, so there's a bit of me now that's sitting thinking, old people are stupid, they got what they deserve, because, here's me logic, they're sitting there, Grim Reaper taps on the window, the logic would kick in, hang on, you're a supernatural being, why can't you get through the door?
Oh, yeah, I suppose so.
Yes. So I would have just gone, I'd have called Bluff right there. Mm-hmm. Robinson? Bluff. There you go.
Well, it killed three people.
We had to say it four times, mate. Cool.
I know.
Thanks for keeping us on topic, man.
To Adam's point, Apple actually is in iOS 12 implementing even more privacy steps for patients when it comes to medical data, because iOS 12 will bring the capability, or actually iOS 11 already kind of has it, but iOS 12 extended, to store real medical data, so from hospitals and your doctors and so on, in your health app. And with that come more privacy settings and more control, simply because you don't want that kind of information shared just with, I don't know, Facebook.
No. Bob Beach has called us apocryphal, so we'll move on. iPhone 8 Plus, now we're still in Q2 here, don't forget, iPhone 8 Plus has significantly outsold iPhone 10 in Q2. 24% of sales for Apple were iPhone 8 Plus, and only 17% of sales for iPhone 10. Discuss.
Yeah, well, I've got plenty of friends who have said they prefer the button. The button's a massive bone of contention for a lot of people. So these are my friends who've gone out, they bought the iPhone 10, used it for a few days. Of course, Apple's return policy is 14 days, or a bit more. And they've just not enjoyed the button aspect of it. Now, also, the reason why they've gone for the Plus is because they want the camera. They won't be able to have that camera. So that makes sense that people who maybe tried the iPhone 10 have moved to the Plus.
Even though it's exactly the same camera as it is in the 7 Plus. 7 Plus.
Yeah, even that. In other words, they believe that the camera probably is better.
They deserve the beating that they're going to get, the frigging sheep.
Yeah, well, you know, they look at the iPhone 8 camera, and of course it's small and round, and they look at the iPhone 8 Plus camera and go, well, I still want that facility for the, the zoom in, etc. So I can honestly speak from quite a few of my friends who've tried the iPhone 10 and moved to the Plus, and I think that'll make a sense to a lot of people, really, that the actual button, people like the button, they want to be able to press it.
There are lots of reasons to buy the iPhone 8 Plus and the iPhone 10, but none of them are the camera. Not one of them is the camera, because this camera is the identical camera module. The only thing you get with iPhone 10 is it does that horrible horseshit HDR crap thing with it that enhances it, the color enhancement thing, which you take that off and it's the same image.
I always viewed the iPhone 10 as sort of Apple's test case, their sandbox. I always looked at it as it allowed Apple to kind of introduce some features that were going to be a lot more expensive and not practical, at least yet, to put in the mainline phone. And that's why it's priced higher. And if people want to be on the cutting edge and they want to kind of get a taste of tomorrow's phone, they can do it. But I'm not surprised that the 8 and 8 Plus remained sort of the standard phones. I thought that was the plan all along. In fact, I was a little surprised, frankly, I'll admit, that the iPhone 10 sold as well as it did. I always thought that was going to be kind of the people who want to be on the leading edge and were willing to pay for their privilege.
Don't you chaps miss the button? I mean, I don't think I'd buy an iPhone without a physical button.
I think I only miss the button when I'm driving the car. In other words, the phone's mounted on a car vent mount. So you kind of normally would lean over, and of course it's trying to look at your face, and you don't want to be tapping in a passcode. So I used to obviously use my finger on the button. So I do miss that only when I'm driving. Let's be face it, I shouldn't be playing with a phone while I'm driving anyway. So in a way, it's doing, it's a good job.
It's keeping you safe.
It's The off antenna is it's a lovely thing. It's very beautiful. I haven't got one, so but I do look at it, and I think the notch is a little bit ugly.
Okay.
There was silence then, wasn't it? Absolute silence.
Well, now, funny you should say that, Greeny, because Samsung have released a series of adverts this week. thanks, mate. Taking the piss out of Apple iPhone 10 for the notch. And they're saying, you don't want the notch, upgrade to a Samsung. And I think they're horrific, because all they are is filmed in a fake Apple store. They've even got iPods and other the HomePod, rather, and other real Apple devices in the fake store that they've got. So it must have cost them a fortune to buy the stuff to kick it out to make it look like an Apple store. And the guy's there with an Apple logo on. Everything is Apple. They never show the Samsung phone once. All you see at the end is the Samsung logo. I'm like, Apple will pay you to keep running these ads, I'm sure.
They probably had all of the props on a 14-day return anyway.
Yeah. Took them all back the week after.
Somebody walked into Apple store going, I need one of everything that you own. I'll see you in 14 days.
It's for me, it's a design mistake. I think the watch is a design mistake, and I think the notch in the iPhone 10 is a design mistake.
Well, you say that, Greeny, but I've only found one person who's bought a 10 who says it's a design failure. The rest all say they like the way it's been utilized.
Well, to be honest, I mean, you know, I haven't got one, so I can't give.
I haven't got one. I'm only going on what other people have told me.
Well, Jim's got one. What do you think?
To be honest with you, I do not notice the notch at all. The screen is beautiful. I would nowhere near would have spent that sort of money on a device if I didn't believe I was getting, you know, a good bit of tech for my money. And I generally don't. I've never ever thought the notch was a problem. And if we look at other phones, Chinese phones on the market right now, they're copying the notch. Be it slightly smaller, but other manufacturers are actually copying the notch. So Samsung are the only people who have a problem with this notch. I really believe that. And they're sort of hanging on to it. But yes, Bob Beach, you're right. The notch is just not an issue. If you've got an iPhone 10, you've had it since day one, like I have, it's not a problem.
And the notch they're copying on the Chinese phones doesn't even do anything.
It's just a mask, yeah.
There was something in the Samsung store which you could download, and all it was a piece of wallpaper, but give your Samsung phone the notch you look at, which I think is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. But there Bob you go.
Bob Beach says he thought the video was quite funny, but agreed it wouldn't make me want to buy a Samsung. And he says notch is not an issue. Magic Man's going, no, 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 Greeny, which, unless Greeny's having sex with him, means I think he disagrees with you, mate. and to make Will happy, the new Apple Watch will also have a notch, says Windrider. Ugly and notched.
I doubt that very much. It's a no issue. It's a no issue.
Well, that's what I say. Everyone I've spoken to has got a problem. What they've all said, the 10 rather, they've all said no problem at all. Last story then is the App Store turns 10.
The App Store that almost didn't happen. That Steve Jobs did not want to happen.
Well, yeah, but I mean, there was an interesting thing. Greeny posted a story last night in the Big Show that we talked a little bit about it. But there was an interesting stat in that where it was the amount of apps they'd sold after a month of the App Store exceeded the total sales globally for iTunes.
Wow. Yeah.
The number of apps they sold after a month exceeded the total sales in iTunes. I was gobsmacked at that. Absolutely gobsmacked.
Yeah, I think one of those fun things I remember when the App Store first came on, that was I was actually on holiday at the time, and please forgive me if I've told the story before, but I remember actually sitting there in the foyer waiting for them to get our room together. I was sitting there with my wife, and I jumped onto the Wi-Fi straight away with my iPhone, and I was scrolling through the App Store, and I come to the end of the App Store. And I think I'll be able to tell that story when I'm an old and grey, saying I once sat in a hotel foyer and scrolled through every app, and I came to the end, and it was like, well, I've got all the good games in the App Store now.
Oh,
and I bought the chess one, and I bought, it was a really good, actually good 3D chess games at the time when the App Store first came out. Obviously, people were thinking, like, what do people play on the phone? And yes, it was Super the Monkey Ball, which was the biggest sort of 3D type game, but there was a 3D chess game that I remember so well. You could rotate around the pieces, and it was glass, and it was incredible. And I remember that was kind of the last bounce on the kind of the scroll. It was like the chess board was at the end. I thought, oh, I'll buy that as well. So yeah, I probably will look back on that fondly and remember that it's like going to the phone directory. You know, you get to Z, and yeah, I've read all the names now.
It's like, you reached the end of the internet. Would you like to start again?
Perfect.
I've explained to my son about a single return Google search, and he's like, what? I said, yeah. I said, you won't find anyone who's under 40 who's done this, but you used to search for stuff. And I did Vladimir Komarov, who was a Russian guy who burned up in space, and I got a single return Google search. Wow. And I'm going back. I've got to be going back to the turn of this century. So it was in the infancy. No, as in infancy. Infancy. There we go.
Oh, I was going to say, I thought stop drinking now, Ewan.
Searching. Nobody had to. But it was. I said, yeah, you used to do searches once in a while, and you'd just get a single return come back. And he looks at me like, you're talking out your arse, Dad. Single return in Google. It's like 2 billion pages.
Adam Engst from Tidbits calls that a twush.
A twat?
A twush.
A twush. What does that stand for, though?
He just made it up. I think he just made the name up.
So there you go, James. You need to. So you can't do one now. There's no way on God's green earth you get a single return Google search now, so.
I mean, yeah, that's interesting fact. Is anybody ever, or is there a way of getting a single return? I guess you have to spell something wrong, but to give you nothing or one thing if you spell something wrong. If you type in probably, I don't know, what's on at the cinema, type in torrent, and then I guess you might get one if you spell it wrong. I don't know.
Yeah. So what was everyone's first app? What was mine started ball rolling. Mine was Shuffleboard. Was the first app I ever
had. The very first app?
The first iOS app you downloaded.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Anyone remember? Mine was Shuffleboard, definitely.
Well, I probably...
There's actually a way to view it on iTunes.
You can go back to your purchase history, I suppose.
You go to your purchase history, again, you've got to scroll all the way through, which will take us guys probably quite a while.
But some of the apps might have been deleted as well, though, that you bought. So. True. I just remembered it. I can't believe that you guys don't remember it.
Well, I think mine definitely was, because I wanted to show off my phone so badly to people, was probably Super Monkey Ball, because, as I said before, it was probably the first game that was true 3D. You can move around it. And I think it was one of the opening titles. So I'm pretty sure it would have been Super Monkey Ball without looking, but definitely there.
Oh, the Pinter Lager app. Do you remember that one?
The
app where
it would fill
and drink it, yeah. You'd tap it and it would refill.
I mean,
and the lighter app.
The lighter app. I don't know if anybody remembers the Jewel. Do you remember the Jewel that these kids were buying? And it was like, it displays a Jewel on your iPhone. It was like $500.
Oh, it was
$1,000. It was
$1,000.
Yeah.
I am rich or something like that it was called.
Yeah.
For me, it looks like NetNewsWire and Urban Spoon and the Light app. There was one just called Light.
Was that where you turned your screen into a flashlight?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah.
And, of course, Tap Tap Revenge.
Never had that.
I've been trying to find Google searches that won't return anything. And I thought, okay, well, I'll try one. And
British Mac.
No.
Latest British Mac podcast.
I googled a monkey in bra and knickers. No, that's,
and you still.
I've got an image of it, so I think Jim's absolutely right. Anything you type in, you can pretty much find. So yes, if you type in monkey bras and knickers, you'll find something. How cool is that?
We've got Mark, who's on a boat in the middle of the Solent, watching us. And he's just sent me a tweet saying, mine was the pint of beer app. Good on you, Mark. That's a British tech. Well done, man.
Yep, yep. Pint of beer app.
Well done, mate. They have just put a link to the I Am Rich app on Wikipedia. It's got its own Wikipedia page. And it was $999.99.
Yeah.
2006.
Well, that was the maximum you could charge, I think, at the time, wasn't it? The API didn't let you charge any more than that.
Well, it was 0.1 megabyte. So there you go, you're getting a lot for your money.
And it wasn't even animated, the jewel, was it?
No, it was just a photograph of a ruby, a red ruby. There you go.
Twush is a 140-character tweet, says Chuck in the Slack chat room.
Yes, I remembered incorrectly.
That's all right.
I think somebody remembered it.
Right? There's a queue for that.
Yeah, Magic Man says it's a Google whack.
A Google whack?
Is a one return search. One hit search.
That comes from Gorman, isn't it? Gorman mentioned that. Dave Gorman. Yeah, remember the comedian Dave Gorman who went around the world and found all the Dave Gormans around the world and got them all together into one room? I think he termed the word Google whack, didn't he?
Oh, that's right. I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure that's where I first heard the word Google whack. Obviously, he may have gone somewhere else, but Dave Gorman, what statistics?
Well, he's a mathematician, wasn't he, as well? He did mathematics at uni.
Yeah. If anybody's listening and not heard about Dave Gorman, definitely Google him, and some of his videos are just incredible, really good fun.
He did a thing for statistics where he had marbles that he took out of one jar and put them into another when he got a laugh, and then he took five marbles out and put them back in the jar when no one laughed at his jokes to work out whether he should use them or not. And no one ever knew. In the end, he said people were laughing when he took the things out of the jars and put them into the jars. So it was like, I don't know whether to keep this in the act or not.
Oh, gosh. I'm looking for how to find my purchases, but I'm lost on my iPhone. Where on earth? Where do you find your past purchases now? Well, they put it used to be in the...
If you go into updates and then click on your little icon...
Oh, your face.
Your account, and then it'll be in purchases, and you got to scroll all the way to the very, very bottom.
Perfect app.
My son just showed me that yesterday, because I forgot.
Oh, my God, I can do it. Okay, I'm getting to the bottom. It was, check this out, it was the Apple remote was the first thing I downloaded.
Yeah, that's on mine, too. I wonder if that was a default. Or maybe have been the very first app in the App Store. Might have been the first app in the App Store.
Apple Remote, Facebook AIM, if everybody remembers AIM. Shazam was close there. TapTap, Cuberunner, Aqua Forest. Anybody remembers Aqua Forest? That was a great game. Enigma was also a great game, a water game, Enigma. And Trism.
I remember that one. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, there's some good ones there. It's cool.
Sorry, Jack.
The Carling.
A couple of my early ones are Pangea games, Pangea VR and Chromag Rally. Anybody remembers those?
More Carabel.
Yeah, is it Carling?
Well, this must make for fascinating video for you.
Well, I don't know.
I think it makes some. It's great.
Pocket guitar. I remember that.
And Runkeeper being one of the first apps there. Runkeeper was there early on.
Really?
We talk about, when we look at sort of, Runkeeper got there before Nike did, if I remember rightly. And we all thought Nike at the time was going to buy Runkeeper apps. We couldn't believe that this brilliant app was tracking, your pace and where you'd been, etc. That's a good one. That was there early on. Again, a bit of nostalgia there.
This podcast and all these is brought to you by TSO Host. Yes, we really would be lost without them. I keep saying that, but we really, really would. All the old servers are gone. They don't work anymore. And we've transferred over. I want to say a special thanks to Patrice and Adam for helping out. And also, especially Anders, who's kind of helped pull it all together and coordinate the activity of getting everything transferred over. But I think we've got 5 days left on it, and then it's gone. So we are thoroughly in the TSO host world now, and we would be swimming without or up Pooh Creek with using our hands. So thanks to TSO host. You must tweet out, please, and say thank you to TSO host for supporting at British Tech on Twitter, or say something on Facebook or Instagram or any of the other platforms that you can get TSO host on, and say thanks for that, because we really are just desperately, desperately grateful to them. Unless we get that kind of traction of people saying thanks very much on a regular basis, we will lose them as a sponsor, and we can't risk losing them because we'd just go away if we did. So please, thank you for TSO host. There is a whole pile of Offaloka codes coming, and we'll have transfer deals and that kind of stuff for you to get your services in there if you want to support them too financially. But please make sure you say a big thank you to them. And also say a big thank you to Telestream, at Telestream on social media, because they give us the switching software. We're not using it today because it's too frigging hot down the studio, but they're the ones that give us the brick wall behind and all the virtual screens and that kind of thing. So they're really, really good. If you want to use Telestream Wirecast, then you've got to give it a go. There's a trial you can have a go with for 30 days, and you will be hooked on it once you get down there. Anything that's like a live stream of a sport or something like a church or something like that, then must have software, and you've got ScreenFlow from them as well as. And thanks to Hoya. Now, these are the glasses I paid for. I haven't got my other ones on because they're probably melted to the desk down at the office from all the heat, but these are my new Hoya Unikus, and they are the most comfortable pair of glasses I've ever owned in my entire life. And Mark's always giving me grief because I tend to have my glasses sat just on the top of my nose here rather than right back. And I can't actually read with these on if I do that, so I have to push them all the way back up into the correct position. Then my lenses are in perfect space and I can see perfectly. I love these things. They are great. I do not miss my old ones, although my old ones are lovely acrylics, very heavy and that kind of stuff, and I thought I'd miss them, but I haven't. I've really enjoyed them. And the other big announcement that we've got, and this is really kind of cool, is that we've signed up to a new kind of review system called Ooh Review, OOHREVIEW .com. So go to ooreview.com/British Tech Network, and on there you can leave reviews of each individual episode that you've come to. So click down, pick the date that you listened, and then say what you think about the podcast. And it's a really cool system, and I'm saying it because you should be able using it for your own services as well, because it's completely anonymous. But the thing that's really cool, and I think this really is the coolest thing ever, is that you can interact with anonymous critics of your service. So you sign up for them, and they say, right, okay, you sign up and you give a review to us, but they don't let us see who you are. So if you say, oh, yeah, you're all a bunch of wankers, then that's fine. And I can write back and go, well, why do you think we're all a bunch of wankers? And you can write back to me, and at no point do I ever know who you are. So
you just say it's just you and
anonymous. It's just, no, it's me. They know it's me writing back to them.
No, it's just you that are wanker. No,
oh, right. Yeah, no, I get that. I get email that comes through, and they just say wanker on it, and that's it. They don't even say anything else.
Oh, bless you. We love you, mate. We love you.
I know, mate. I'm happy. Don't worry. I've laughed it off with the therapist. So it's a really cool system. I challenge you to have a go, write us in, and there's like 5 criteria that we've got as questions, like audio quality, discussion topic quality, that kind of stuff. And you can rate us in stars 1 to 5, and we can look back over like a trend analysis of the last 3 months and say, well, 70% of people thought the audio quality was great, so let's keep doing what we're doing, and 25% of people thought the topics were poor, so let's think about what we change the topics to, and we can help change the show into what it is that you want. We'll do it on a trend analysis, not just one person who writes in with one comment. But you can comment. Ooh Review, OOH revieiew.com/British Tech Network. And if you've got your own business that you want to sign it up for, then do it, because it's an absolutely brilliant way. I've got a pal, actually, who's a salesman for a firm. And I said, why don't you just do an anonymous sales thing with the people that you supply to, the suppliers? And he went, oh, no, no, we'd know we're watching. I said, no, but your boss would then get an anonymous review from the shops that you visit that says how good you were as a salesman, and whether you treated them right and that kind of stuff. And it keep you on your mettle. He went, I'll put that to him. And they've adopted it. So it's good. It's good. Right. Time for the cool thing. Start us off, Monsieur Christensen.
All right. So, because we were talking about health stuff, and because Will brought up this calculate your death date, I was curious if such a thing existed. And there's actually a couple apps that will do exactly this. So as we've been talking, I found a couple apps, two different ones. The first one is called Giro Lifespan.
Right.
And I will post a link to it in the chat here in a second. But on this one, you know, I would say, and what they both will allow you to suck in all of your health kit data in various categories. You can, when you fire up the apps, you can control, it will ask you, hey, what do you want to suck in? What information do you want to give us? And you can turn things on or off. So if you're worried about certain privacy and things like that, the Giro one, I would advise people look through the terms and conditions, because it does look like it's part of they're going to suck your data in and they're going to do research with it. They're a company that's devoted to sort of this lifespan sort of calculation stuff. And so they say they anonymize it basically, so it's non-identifiable data. They do take some identifiable data in terms of setting up an account, and you can set up an account through email or Facebook. But you know, their terms and conditions are pretty straightforward. You know, and they do mention that, you know, if there is a data breach, it's possible that this could be traced back to you because of the amount of data that they potentially have.
How long have you got then?
So according to, I let it suck my data in, and according to Giro right now, I'll live to 73, which isn't too great.
That's rubbish.
but what's really cool about this one is you can tap it and you can see, what the trends are. And so like for this month, part of the problem was I lost a number of years because the last couple of weeks I've been on vacation and I haven't been exercising as much. I was on vacation and then I was at max stock. And so I wasn't eating as healthy and I wasn't exercising as much. And so it factors in that, and you can drill down in on the details, and it will help you figure out why you're losing years or why you're gaining years. And then you can make notes in the app. It actually looks like a pretty nice app. So if you're willing to let them have your data for research purposes and you don't worry about that stuff too much, it looks like it could be helpful for a lot of people. It can almost serve as a diary. It does have the option to tie your account to Facebook, which I immediately chose not to, for obvious me privacy reasons. So there's that one called Get Giro. Now, if you want one that'll just do it, that's not quite as sophisticated and doesn't have quite as many features, there is one called Deadline. does the same thing. It asks you a few simple questions. It doesn't look like this is doing any data sharing. I think this is happening all on the device, and they're just using answers to some common questions plus your health kit data. And on this one, I fare a little bit better. I'm going to live to 79. So. But I'm getting healthier. And this, you know, I would say it's probably fairly accurate because I am overweight and I haven't been exercising as much. And as I change those habits, hopefully these numbers will change and these apps will, especially the Giro one, looks like it could be helpful for some people. But again, I would advise review the privacy policy and make sure you understand what data they're getting access to and how they're using it.
But don't you think the Death Watch app would be a good thing?
Well, that's what these are.
You're fine. Actually,
he's gone and done some research for you. And there is a caveat, though, Adam, because Magic Man tried one of these and he said he died 3 years ago.
I love that. I love it.
Again, yeah, I mean, And I guess that's the idea behind the Jira one, is they're trying to, I'm assuming they're probably using, Apple has their whole research API part of HealthKit. I'm assuming it's using that. And they claim to be working with medical institutions. And also, again, this is something you might be concerned about, the privacy. They do mention that they work with pharmaceutical companies as well. So, you know, again, read the terms of service, know what you're, how you're sharing your data. But if you're comfortable with it and you think you could benefit from this kind of app, it might be helpful.
Yeah.
Well, it's not going to be when you're dead, is it? I mean, you're not going to benefit from that, are you?
Idiosyncrasies may apply.
Or just have fun with it. Look at it and just have fun with it, too.
Yeah.
I mean, so the deadline one is probably good for that because it doesn't look like it's sharing any of your health data.
I'm going to do that. Well, Chucky's giving us his cool thing.
Sure. Well, mine has nothing to do with when you might die, but if you lose your data in a data breach, you may wish you were dead. So I'll help try to protect yourself from that. If you're not using a password manager, you really should be. I think everybody on the show who's listening to the show knows that. You know, you don't want the same password used all over the place. You want to make sure it's a complex password that can't be forget. You want to change it. All those things. A lot of people use 1Password, and I love it. I'm a big fan of 1Password. I'm a 1Password user myself, but it's not for everybody. They've moved to a subscription-based service, and a lot of people have concerns with that and don't love it, including me. So if you're looking for an alternative, I found an open-source alternative that I really like a lot. It's called Bitwarden, bitwarden.com. I just put the link in the chat room. It's an open-source password manager that looks and acts very much like 1Password. It acts in a lot of the same ways. It has vault categorized your passwords. You can share your passwords and specific words with trusted people so that you can, you know, share your bank account with your wife and all that good stuff. It's very easy to use. If you use 1Password, you can use Bitwarden. It has desktop apps. It has a web service. It has iOS apps. I think it has Android apps too, if that's what floats your boat. It also uses the biometrics on iOS devices, so you can use your Touch ID or your Face ID to lock. You can use two-factor authentication. Really looks very, very slick. Looks easy to use. I've been impressed with it so far. If you're currently a 1Password user or you use a different password manager, it can help you walk through exporting your data from your old 1Password or other program and import it right directly into Bitwarden so that you don't have to enter all those hundreds of passwords that you're storing there. If you're looking for an alternative, if you're looking for an open source, this is free for individual use, definitely worth a look, bitwarden.com.
Excellent, mate. Thank you. Good pick. James, what do you have for us?
Yes, I touched on this a little bit last week. So I bought this projector. It's by a company called Wimius. I don't know. Have a look on the link. I've whacked it on there. Bought it from Amazon. £130. £130.99 right now. What a bargain. I had an outdoor cinema last night in the gardens. We put a sheet up, and we had a huge sheet up, and it just was brilliant. So the specs are, it's a 3,300 lumens projector. It gives you a 176-inch display at full 1080p, which is brilliant. I can't say a good enough thing for the money, 131 quid, for example. It's got sort of USBs inside of it. Now, it says that I can put a film onto a USB, plug it in, and watch it through the menu. Now, it's got an iOS interface menu built into the projector, so it shows you video, photos, and it's got like iOS buttons to do that. But I've had no luck in actually getting a film actually onto it, so I'm not sure whether I've got a broken one or I'm doing something.
A format issue, I would reckon.
Yeah, I've tried. FAT32X, all that kind of stuff. But I don't seem to have any joy. It could be my memory stick again. I don't know. So I can't really comment on the USB side, but it's got HDMIs on, the usual VGA. So two HDMIs, VGA on there. If you're still using VGA, silly teacher. but there you go. And obviously, I'm outputting to a pair of speakers. So I've got a nubby pair of Yamaha, sort of big, sort of what you'd take into a concert, really, if you're playing a guitar or whatever. So I've outputted the sound from it into that, and it's just absolutely brilliant. Now, there are speakers built in as well. So if you're sort of sitting there in the garden and you want to put something on the wall, there are speakers built in, and they're not bad. They're not brilliant, but they're not bad, considering this is a £130 projector. It comes with a remote control, so you can zoom and do all that kind of funky stuff on it. But I tell you what, for something that I'm just playing with in the garden for, you know, a bit of outdoor cinema, it's brilliant. £130 delivered from Amazon. What a bargain. Go and grab it.
It's good. It's good.
Well, which one is it again?
It's in the chat room.
It's a chat room. It's a Wemus. Oh, if I actually spell it to people who may be on the audio podcast, it's Wimius. And it's the 3,300 lumens one. It'll give you 176-inch image. What a bargain.
Excellent.
Loving it. Loving it at the moment.
I bought years ago, and I'm going back probably 20 years now, maybe. I bought a data projector because I needed it for a project. And I was going to do loads of these types of projects over the coming couple of years. And I did use it an awful lot. I went through two bulbs in it. But I went into the guy and I was like, he put me one on the screen. And he said, what do you think? I'm like, it's good, but I don't do things in a room like this. The lights are on and the curtains are open. Can we go out in the office and test it? He said, well, you won't see that one out there. And he kept bringing out these projectors and saying, like, and then eventually he shot one onto the wall in a bright office. I said, yeah, I'll have that one. And he went, it's £5,500, mate.
Mm.
And I paid for a 5,000 ANSI lumens projector 20 years ago, and I paid £5,500 for it. So I got good use out of it, so I can't complain. But you look now at 3,000 lumens for £130, and I want to cry.
It's that whole terabyte thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hard drive. We paid a lot for that.
Greeny, tell us the scintillating and riveting pick that you have brought with you.
Well, as you probably know, I like to take advantage of Chinese underpaid workers. It's one of my favourite hobbies. to that end, I want to give Wish.com a big thumbs up, which are doing exactly the same thing. So you can buy exactly the same... Shall I stop now? But anyway, I'll continue anyway because it's too late to stop.
It's never too late, Will. Fail. Eject, eject.
What are you doing?
Well, Wish.com. It's the most amazing stuff. So it's all the stuff that comes from China, and I'm sure they're all underpaid workers over there, but I'm sure we can find a way to make it better for them. But there are exactly the same headphones as your Apple ones, which are, what, 160? Something like that. The Bluetooth ones. And you can get them for a tenner. And they take a while to arrive, but you get them in China.
Never.
Go on, Nate. Okay.
Don't string him out any longer, mate. Chuck's got to go.
Well, I want is one item that you would like to buy. That's all I want.
Projector. Okay.
Anything.
Projector. There we go.
Okay, projector. Okay. £13.
It's bound to work.
£13, 2018, new ocean wave music projector. Probably not what the thing you're looking for, but it's got great reviews. What else we got? It's just mad. Everything is so incredibly cheap. So Wish.com, and they do loads of Apple stuff as well. Or it looks like Apple stuff, probably isn't.
But it can take a while to get here.
Yeah, it takes about 2 weeks.
They do ladies 4XL dresses.
I didn't know women came in 4XL. You're looking it up right now, aren't you? I know.
I clicked the link that James put in the chat room.
Yes.
It's absolute, and they do the weirdest stuff you've ever known. So, give me another name. Got anything. Think of anything.
Jogging pants. Trolling bust at the moment.
Okay, jogging pants.
It wants me to sign up before I even look at this. I'm not signed up for this.
Yeah.
It looks like it's going to steal my account information straight away.
Moccasin. Okay. Jogging pants, £5.
TK Maxx, £2.99.
Well, no, these are all branded. And
I'm sure they are.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Oh, and watches. The watches they sell, just absolutely incredible.
You know, they stop as soon as they arrive, right?
Probably.
Yes, do be careful.
Yeah, anyway, there it is. That's my pick. And they do lots of good Apple stuff. So if you don't want to pay, what, is it $150, $160 for headphones, and you'd rather just spend a fiver or a tenner, then wish.com. Absolutely. Yeah.
Pick of the week.
Someone's left us a new review. 5 stars.
Who was?
I don't know. It's anonymous, you twat.
Oh, God. Sometimes your language.
Well, what do you expect, you moron? I just announced that we've signed up to an anonymous review system, and the first one we get, you ask me who it is. What do you expect?
Just, if you could just hold on for 4 seconds, there'll be another review up at the moment, and it might be very nice about the host.
He was just testing you to make sure you're telling the truth.
That's the title of the show. We've got an anonymous review. Really? Who from?
Good God. I think it's time to go.
Not yet.
Bob Beach in the chat room sent an anonymous review.
My cool thing is on iOS, and it's Golf Clash. Oh, here we go. Hang on. This way. Golf Clash. It's a game for golf, but you play on a hole. They haven't really grasped the rules of golf, unfortunately, because you just play in rotation regardless of whether you go in the water a lot, and it penalizes your stroke and distance for water when it shouldn't. But it's kind of an addictive game, and I've got a phone call.
Getting a phone call.
It's an 0121 number, so it doesn't work. But it's Golf Clash. It's got a crappy jewels and coins system kind of thing.
So what you're saying is it's totally rubbish. The first two things that you just said.
No. So the game itself is actually fairly addictive, and it's fairly easy to play, and the gameplay is very good. The coinage system and stuff like that, I'm beating people that have clearly paid a fortune to get the best clubs, the best balls, and that kind of stuff. And I'm kicking their ass with just the basic stuff that I've got, that the things given to me for winning. I haven't spent a penny on it, and I'm cleaning up. So a little bit of nous, a little bit of gameplay, and keeping yourself in play rather than taking the big shot, trying to go over the corner and that kind of stuff. And it's a decent game. It's all right. Golf Clash. You stay away from the money because they will quickly empty your pocket, but you can still play really, really well without it. So not a problem. Where can we get a hold of you very quickly? James. No, not James. Adam, Christ.
Oh, that's easy. MattCast.com and MattCast on Twitter.
And my son's saying, shout out my Twitch account, Dad. No. Chuck, where are you, mate?
Is he streaming?
Chuck's gone.
Yeah. No, I'm here.
All right. The video's gone. He's on twitch.com/skyline1015. There you go. Chuck,
am I still sorry, mate. Yes, that's right.
Where are you?
At Chuck Latornis on Twitter. That's the best place to find all the other. There are some pretty cool new things coming up, so do follow me there, and I'll let you know what's going on. Also, keep an eye out for me at randomaccess.com, 2 M's, 2 C's, 2 S's, and I'm also posting quite a bit of new content over at techversuswild.net. some fun Excellent. Stuff. Yeah.
Thank you. James, where can we get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can get me. It's on Twitter. It's at James Rickards. All one word. Thank you very much.
I've just got a tweet from Mark Afloat in the Solent saying it may have been me or not.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's good.
Anonymity is voluntary.
Thanks for that anonymous review, Mark. James, actually, James can sleep now because he would have stayed awake tonight wondering who it was.
Thank you, mate.
Where can you get hold of you, Mr. Green?
Will at BritishMac.com.
Will at BritishMac. And is there an episode coming soon, mate?
Yes, yes.
Come on, Will, you can do it, mate. Let's have it.
Oh, thanks, Jim. I know I can. I need to get myself off my lazy arse and get on with it.
State of mind, mate. State of mind.
Yeah, it is state of mind. And also, I'm going to get myself a dildo from £113 to £4 from wish.com.
Well, who buys a dildo at £113?
Well, you know, how does
Don't answer that. Don't answer that. Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry, everyone.
It's rhetorical.
We'll keep that anonymous as well.
Some people do it for 18.
Really? My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. You can find the network at British Tech. I'm going to rapidly shut this down before it gets any worse, and I've got a lot of editing to do because I've already got one to find. Have a great weekend. Review us on ureview.com/British Tech Network. See you next week. Thanks for listening.
Or don't. Oh, what? Chuck, it's so
nice to rate random shit like this.
Oh, great to see you. Great to see you all.
Thank you. I just...
It was a lot of fun. And I'm here next week.
Oh, brilliant. My face hurts. My face actually hurts. Thank you.